The learning of the Divrei Torah and hopefully the growth that will flow from this morning's shurim should be Eilei Neshama for Menashe Eliezer ben Yitzchak. That's Myron Moskowitz, Olav HaShalom, the father of our Moshe Moskowitz. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi writes in the Sefer HaKuzri a comment that I think we've perhaps touched on in the past. He says, you know, different parts of the world have different, physically different climates. There are no palm trees growing in Bergenfield. There are no polar bears in Florida. Different parts of the world lend themselves to different types of plants and animals, different types of flora and fauna. And the Sefer HaKuzri writes that what's true physically is true spiritually as well. That different parts of the world have different spiritual climates and lend themselves to different types of spiritual growth. He speaks specifically about Eretz Yisrael. And I think what's true in terms of different places is also true in terms of different times. At the different times of the Jewish calendar have different spiritual climates, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You can try to figure out like what type of growth does a particular time in the calendar lend itself to. You can do tshuva any time of the year, but there's something particularly effective about tshuva in El, tshuva in Seres Tshuva. We can be mechazek our emuna any time of the year, but Pesach time has a particular flavor of emuna that lends itself to, and so does Sukkot time. I'd be curious to figure out what the month of Teves is all about. We'll begin by exploring Asar B'Teves in particular, but we'll see that the patterns that we'll uncover there will expand beyond Asar B'Teves, I think, to the month of Teves in general, using one or two psukim, some which are not so familiar and some which are super familiar. And hopefully we'll find not only patterns in the Tanakh, but patterns that we can use in terms of our own lives, our own growth, our own ambition, figuring out how we can maximize these weeks this month. But let's begin with Asar B'Teves. Yeah. When we begin with Asar B'Teves, Asar B'Teves is a curious fast, because we know it's one of a set of four fasts, the four fasts we have over the course of the year that relate to the Churban, that Tzom Gedalia, Asar B'Teves, Shavas V'Tamuz, Tisha B'Av. That's a list that already appears in a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah Daf Yud Ches, based on a pasuk in Zechariah. Zechariah is one of the Nevi'im who accompanies the Jews back to build the second Beis HaMikdash, so they're trying to figure out, you know, how does this work? Ha'evka, do we still fast those four fasts? Now that we're back in Eretz Yisrael, we're building the second Beis HaMikdash, is it appropriate? They mention Tzom HaRevi'i, the Tzom HaChamishi, the fast of the fourth month, that's Tammuz, and of the fifth month, that's Av. Tzom HaShaviv, Tzom HaAsiri, the fast of Elul, of Tishrei rather, Tzom Gedalia, and the fast of this month, Tzom HaAsiri, the fast of the tenth month, Asar B'Teves. Should we fast? Should we not fast? And the way the Gemara understands it, Zechariah says to them, you know, there are many times in Jewish history when you can fast, when you must fast, but at a time of Geula, then those fasts are not only no longer fasts, but Yilu Beis Yisrael L'Sasan L'Simcha. There'll be times of great joy, a vision that we look forward to Mitzvah very, very soon. But when you think about those four fasts, so Asar B'Teves sticks out like a sore thumb. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah Daf Yud Ches works out, like, what are those fasts all about? Asar B'Teves doesn't fit. Tisha B'Av is Tisha B'Av, the Mishnayos tell us, terrible, Churbanos. Shavas B'Tamuz marks many Churbanos as well, and particularly on the Beis HaMikdash front, the breaching of the wall to get in. Imagine that scene of, now we tragically have a little bit of an image in our heads. Imagine the scene of hundreds of thousands of Bavli soldiers breaking through the walls of Yerushalayim and streaming in. 3 weeks later will be the Churban HaBayis. The Bavli soldiers earlier in Tammuz, and a couple hundred years later, the Roman soldiers breaking into Yerushalayim, breaching the walls on Shavas B'Tamuz. Tzom Gedalia is perhaps less dramatic, but it's the end of the end. There had still been Melech Bavel, the emperor, had allowed some sort of Jewish community to remain in Eretz Yisrael, not in Yerushalayim, but he let them remain in Eretz Yisrael after he destroyed the first Beis HaMikdash, gives them a Jewish governor, Gedalia. His assassination, tragically, even more so at the hand of another Jew who felt jilted, was the end of the end. After that, there would be no organized Jewish community until they came back for the Bayis Sheni. So these are all days of real Churban. Asar B'Teves is strangely not as significant. What's the Sarah B'Tavis? It's a couple of years earlier when Melech Bavel showed up and laid siege to Yerushalayim. Certainly must have been frightening. Can't imagine how frightening that was. But it doesn't rise to the level of a Shiva Sivatamas, of a Tisha B'Av. Okay.
And the same thing, no?
Perhaps. So some Gedalia there was actual, some Gedalia was a day of a massacre of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Jews, and it was the end of, that was the final Churban, that was the final nail in the coffin. You're onto something. As always, Rabbi Dulitz, you're onto something. There's another story of Asar B'Tavis. Ironically, the Gemara has two different versions. What's a Machlok Tanam? What's Asar B'Tavis today? Is it about what happened before the Churban? Or is it what happened months after the Churban? Because Asar B'Tavis may also mark, based on Psukim Yecheskel, the day that the news reached Bavel. There had already been a large Jewish community in Bavel for around a decade. As we read in the Megillah Esther, as we read at the end of Sefer Melachim, there had already been waves of Gullus before, and there's a big wave of Gullus imperially pushed. Many of the aristocracy of the Jews were pushed out. Gullus Yechanya, that's when Mordechai goes, leaves Yerushalayim, and many Jews, there was already a large Jewish community in Bavel. News of the Churban reached them half a year later on Asar B'Tavis. So once again, you wonder, it was no doubt a tragic day. There have been many tragic days in the Jewish calendar, but it doesn't seem to rise to the level of certain not Shivas B'Tamas or Tisha B'Av, arguably not even Tzom Gedalia. So that's sort of mystery number one. Mystery number one is Asar B'Tavis doesn't really seem to fit. What is it that we're fasting about? Why does it stand out? And then if you look at the Slichas for Asar B'Tavis, they happen to be particularly beautiful. If you look at the Slichas, here, page 410, the Pizmon for Asar B'Tavis, Avosai Ki Batchu, B'Shem Elokei Tzuri, gives you sort of the general overview. We didn't follow HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hayu Aloch V'Chasar Ad HaChodesh Asri. We were going down and down and down until the month of Tevis. And then you have one stanza that tells the story, Ba'asiri LaChodesh Samach Melech Bavel, the 10th of the month, that's when Melech Bavel showed up and laid siege, several years before they actually broke through in Tammuz and destroyed the Beis HaMikdash in Av. One stanza about the story, and then five stanzas about looking inward, trying to figure out what chet did we do that would have evoked such a reaction. It's a surprising imbalance. Resh and Hey and Mem and Yud and Sadi, those are all talking about our chet, the chet of our forefathers, and then from Chazek and on, we begin to daven, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please bring us back. So the fact that we're sort of downplaying the actual story and spending five times as much focus on the chet, the underlying chet, as the story, also sort of a curious pattern. And then that first stanza, and here's point number three. That first stanza, do you notice any language that you recognize in that first stanza? Looks like the good. So number one, the Tochacha, Halchu Imo Keri. That's the language that's repeated again and again. The Tochacha as a Arucha Tarim will lead to Churban. What? The Mabo. Hayu Halochu V'Chasar Arachodesh Asiri. Now that language is Mabo language. The water is going down and down. And Chodesh Asiri. Now Chodesh Asiri, so it's a little tricky. You remember learning Noach with Rashi. There's a lot of discussion about how to make sense of all the different dates. It's not because Chodesh Asiri is at Teves, or is that Chodesh Asiri from Tishrei, which would give us Tammuz, right? Or is it from Cheshvan? It's hard to know exactly if that's actually a Teves reference. But it does get us thinking, where are there other Teves references in Tanakh? So there's at least one that's not so famous. Maybe the story is somewhat known. There's another one that's very famous does. We just don't necessarily remember the Teves mention. So the one that's not so famous, but first the one that is famous. Think of a year in Mishul, annually. Chodesh Asiri, who Chodesh Teves?
It's in the
Megillas Esther. What happens? We don't usually focus on that date. That's like one of the famous dates. Atilakach Esther, right, exactly. That's when Esther is taken into the path, into Achashverosh. Try to imagine, and again, tragically, since Simchas Torah, we have tragically an easier time imagining. But for many years of thought, like, try to imagine what that was like. Can you imagine what's going on in her block? Everyone knew there was this empire-wide search for a new wife. Esther is one of the last people you would have guessed, especially the Chazal, who said, oh, she's Jewish, but she didn't look particularly attractive, and that was all Achashverosh cared about. Straight, mysteriously, she's snatched away. Imagine what the Jews in Shushan felt like. Imagine what the feeling was like on that block. And then she was just gone. No one knew what was going to happen. And the assumption was that she was going to be, pardon the expression, but the way ancient kings treated their women, they treated them like garbage. There was less than zero respect. She was going to be left in a harem. Maybe she'd move to some other harem, and she would live out the rest of her life anonymously in a place of debasement. And then, Esther is taken to the king. And you think that this is like adding salt into the wound in the worst way. The last place she wants to be. The last man she wants to spend time with. Where else do you find Teves? Ezra comes back. Ezra is sent several decades later. Ezra is sent by the Emperor Cyrus. Koresh is ready to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And he authorizes the Jews, go back to Eretz Yisrael, build your base, and make sure they're still be part of the Persian Empire. But he gives them plenty of religious freedom. He actually authorizes Ezra to be the chief rabbi. And he's going to, his psak is law, send it back, you're going to build a base on Mikdash. Ezra comes back, and much of the story of Sefer Ezra, Ezra comes back and finds that there already had been some Jewish community that had already come back from Babel. And it's a sorry state of affairs. There's rampant intermarriage. The spiritual state of the Jews in Eretz Yisrael, the early Zionists, where the first Aliyah back from Babel, it was largely a spiritually sorry state of affairs. And Ezra gives a massive drushes. He gathers people together for a big Tzeres Tefillah and Tshuva, and people respond. In Perek Yud, Pasuk Tezayin, they're beginning to address intermarriage, and Jewish men are preparing to let go of their non-Jewish wives, and that work commences. And they work on this for 3 months, all the way until Rosh Chodesh Nisan. What does all of this tell you? The mystery of the non-story, two non-stories of Asara B'Teves, the mystery of the imbalance that the pizmon of Asara B'Teves doesn't really talk about the story nearly as much, five times as much time spent on the chatam that led to it. And finally, the other Teves references. The story, Esther being going into Melech HaChashverosh, Ezra beginning this, what must have been a very long and painful process. Try to imagine that. Pastorally speaking, just think for a moment about what that means. Here's a nice guy, a nice Jewish guy. Nebuch, not so learned, not so spiritually, religiously attuned. Nice guy. He had met a sweet non-Jewish girl. He had married her. He had a family with her. And now we're going to begin the process. That's not one. It's by the thousands, the tens of thousands. Beginning the process of letting go of those women, recognizing, imagine like the personal struggle and pain involved in that at a massive national level. So, what all comes together, I think, in that phrase in the opening stanza, when the first stanza of the Slicha, when he made that Mabul reference. And so we're not sure, again, different machlokas, whether the Chodesh HaAsiri there is or isn't Teves. B'hayu haloch v'chasar. Gradually decreasing. And I think Rabbi Duz was onto something before. I would suggest that what Tevis is all about, and the idea that cuts through all these Tevis curiosities, is a recognition of the value of process. Nothing really happened, so to speak, on Asar B'Tevis when Melech Bavel began. The Jews' lives inside Yerushalayim didn't materially, immediately change just because there was an army massing outside. But it was the first step in a process that would lead them, haloch v'chasar, over the course of the next couple of years, to a tamuz and an av. The process was beginning that with the first steps that would lead to ultimately churban. And on the other end, the other pshat the Gemara has in Asar B'Tevis, it's when word reached Bavel. Again, nothing materially changed in a visceral way. It was before, it was after it. But in both stories of the Tainus, there's a recognition that events don't happen in a vacuum. That events come from somewhere, and events go somewhere. That as Shivas Ratamas, as Tisha B'Av didn't just happen in a vacuum. There had been years of process that was military process, military buildup, that ultimately led to a Churban Bayis. And the Churban Bayis didn't end on Tisha B'Av or on Asiri B'Av. It was going to have ripple effects. It wasn't just going to impact the Jews in Yerushalayim. The Jews in Babel, Jews all over the world, there will be all sorts of secondary impacts, ripples of that event, captured by when the Jews of Babel find out that they lost their Beis HaMikdash months ago. And that's what, perhaps, why the Pizmon, the Refaim of Regensburg, one of the great Chachmai Ashkenaz who wrote that Pizmon, chose specifically to have that proportion. It's not out of whack that you have one paragraph about the story and five paragraphs about the driving chatan. That's exactly the point that someone had mentioned, that I think Michael had mentioned, the language of, or Josh had mentioned, the language of tochacha. That's exactly the point. This churban didn't come out of thin air. There was military process, physical process that led to it, and there was spiritual process that led to it. And we're going to focus on the process that led to it. And as the Chazal tells in Masechta Sota, Meruba Mida Tova Mimidas Peronius. That if these phenomena are true in a negative sense, they're certainly true in a positive sense. And Teves is a month not only of negative process, but also of incredibly positive process. At the time, Batilakach Esther in the month of Teves, horrible Sheva, horrible. Absolutely horrific. With the benefit, as we were talking this past Shabbos morning, with the benefit of 2020 hindsight, we see that as a key moment in Refuah Kodim Lamaka. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was putting Esther, when she headed to Achashverosh's room, she thought that she would be like the other hundreds, thousands of women in Achashverosh's harem, treated like human garbage. You'll apologize. Forgive me, but that's how he treated them. Treated like human garbage, just sort of left in the harem, just be stored there in case of his momentary whim. But instead, that night was the night that Achashverosh decides that Esther will be his queen, which years and years and years later, Mordechai will say, and now I finally, I've been wondering for years, what was HaKadosh Baruch Hu doing? This is why, years later, Mordechai would say to Esther, and that's why it happened, for this moment of Gul of Yeshua Yisrael. It was the beginning of incredibly positive process, even though at the moment, it didn't look anything like that. Ezra, Rosh Chodesh Teves, it was the beginning of a very, very painful process, but a process that would lead to extraordinary, there was emotional pain, no doubt, I imagine, in dissolving those non-halachic marriages between Jewish men and non-Jewish women. But it was the beginning of an incredible process of growth. It was the beginning of laying the groundwork for centuries of Bayis Sheni, laying the groundwork for the Nes of Hanukkah. It was the beginning of extraordinarily positive process. Rabbi Dulles.
But the process about Ezra himself. If you look at the first one, the three things that happen, Ezra's death is on the 9th. So it could be a full circle, but it starts on the 10th, his process, and at the 9th he dies, and that it's a full
That's a very circle. Nice point. That's a very nice point. That's a very nice point. Yeah, there may be a larger Ezra circle here
right,
in Chodesh Tevet. So I think that's something very important to consider. That the power of the month of Teves, entitled as Teves Surprises, in Tanakh and in our own lives and growth. So the avoda of Teves, the school of Teves, if you will, the spiritual climate of Teves, is a focus not on the main event, but a focus on the before, the penumbra of an event. What's the process that leads to it, and where does an event go to? That's really the power and the focus of Teves. The avoda of Teves, I think, is in that space. You know, we had the privilege, we had the privilege this past Shabbos as a kehila of hosting Rav Yaron Levy. Just the way Shabbos morning schedule worked out, we didn't all get the equal opportunity to hear him, unfortunately. I hosted him yesterday at Yeshiva. I brought him to Yeshiva to speak to my 12th grade Talmidim, some of the YU Talmidim as well. Very, very powerful. I was very struck by many things he said over the course of Shabbos and over the course of yesterday morning. Some he repeated, some he expanded on, some were new ideas. And he spoke about how Chazal, the Gemara and Megillah, that no doubt we've all seen, but we sort of breeze by it as opposed to actually noticing that the Gemara says in Maseches Megillah, and talking about the sequencing of the brachas of Kriya, of Shmona Esrei, the Geula is bracha number 7, because we associate Geula with Shemitah, with the 7th year. Because b'motzai shvitz, because the Gemara says in the Shemitah, 7th year will be Mochamas, and then b'motzai shvitz ben David Baz. The Gemara says, I understand. So if he's coming in the year 8, so why is Geula in bracha number 7? The Gemara says, because Mochamas are also aschalted to Geula. Mochamas are often part of the process through which HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings Geula. And he spoke over Shabbos and yesterday morning as well. You see, every milchama, certainly since World War I, has moved forward, has resulted in moving forward the position of Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael in incredibly, incredibly painful ways. The Gemara Sahedrin says there are different ways that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can bring Geula. Be'ito achishena. If we're zocha, then Geula is not a process. If we're zocha, then Geula is instantaneous as soon as we deserve it. If we're not zocha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring Geula despite us, if not because of us. Then it's going to be a slower, natural, more painful process. But a process of geula, it is. And he made a comment yesterday that I was very taken by. He said, "If you see HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings another milchama, that's another very painful patch from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It means in part that we haven't done enough work to bring Geul on our own, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is bringing it instead, in painful ways. And he said, he didn't say in these words, but he said, don't look to the right, don't look to the left, look to yourself. If we haven't done enough work, that means we haven't done enough work. I haven't done enough work. He says, if the totality of Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael isn't yet in the place spiritually where they're bringing Geula, so that's the fault of Jews who are already plugged into Torah, who aren't doing enough to teach and to share in positive and effective ways. We, narrowly, aren't doing enough so that to enable we, broadly, to be in a place that brings Geula. And we, narrowly, a Jew who has already enjoyed the privilege of connectedness to Torah and the clarity about how to look at world events and how to look at national events, so it's on us to positively, effectively teach and share that perspective. So that it's this work is true, and the power of Teves is true on the national level, and it's true on the personal level. So I think we, you know, the close with this. Rambam writes, quoted by the later Poskim, that a tainus, not only the tainios of the sort that we've been experiencing of the last couple of months, tainios for present crisis, but also these tainios of past avelos, the tainios of avelos yeshana, the avelos for the churban. Rambam writes in both in Perek Aleph about the present crisis and Perek Hey about the tanya commemorative tanyos, that the essence of the tanis is tshuva. So if you're just going to go through sort of the shell, the body of fasting and so on and so forth, you're missing the essence. It's a body without a soul. It's a shell without any filling. The fasting of Asar B'Teves is a shell that you fill with a substance of tshuva and growth and greater clarity. So that's true generally, and every Jew has to make a cheshbon of what are the areas in which I need to grow. But probably every tainus also has certain particular flavor what it's about. And I would suggest that Asar B'Teves in particular, and the month of Teves in general, is an opportunity for us to grow more effectively in terms of an appreciation of process, in terms of appreciating how the little things we do have larger impacts on other people, and how we can use that to both to steer away from the negative and to invest more in the positive, and to realize that an event has aftermath also. And I see someone who's gone through something so that I can think about the Teves afterwards. And Teves is the time to become more attuned to the people around me, and to ask, Madua Pneichem Re'im Hayom, as we spoke about Shabbos morning, to think about, to notice what people are going through, and to recognize that they may need support in all sorts of small ways. It's true on the national level, true on the personal level. And we daven that Kadosh Baruch Hu should accept our tefillah, should accept our tshuva, Kadosh Baruch Hu should accept our growth. And Mirtz Hashem, this should be this past Friday, will Mirtz Hashem have been the last of those somos that are tzomos, and Mirtz Hashem going forward, there will be l'sasan l'simcha l'beis Yisrael. Yeah, thank you so much.